Hello, I'm Elvis Costello. Welcome to Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland. My guest is Marion McPartland, who for the last 30 years has been the gracious host of this very program. The history of piano jazz merits more consideration than we could possibly give it in a mere hour, so here we are again in the Piano Jazz studio reminiscing about this series. Welcome to Piano Jazz.
Well, thank you.
Listening again to some of the highlights of the show, it's astonishing to realize what a massive resource the series is. 100 years from now, the series will be constantly revisited for the treasures that it holds. Now, I hope you won't think it impolite of me to disclose this, but Marion, you started this program when you were in your early 60s. Did you ever imagine what you might be starting when you began doing this 30 years ago?
No, when I started, I hadn't the faintest idea.
Well, here we are, celebrating you hosting over 700 shows, and I must say, even though I am in the guest host chair, it's a little intimidating to be here because what I do to a piano does not bear thinking about. But I would like to sing a song, as I think it's the most appropriate way to open this second program. Pete Malinverney has been kind enough to join me at the piano to keep my grubby fingers from it, and I will merely sing the Gordon Jenkins and Johnny Mercer tune, P.S. I Love You.
And I will love it.
What is there to write? What is there to say? Same things happen every day. Not a thing to write, not a thing to say. So I take my pen in hand and start the same old way. Dear, I thought I'd drop a line. The weather's cool, the folks are fine. I'm in bed each night.
You and I have this thing in common, that we've come to America with a love of one or other musical form that is really uniquely American. You found a place in it. Do you think your English upbringing gave you a different perspective because of hearing things on the radio and maybe the little lag it took to hear the new sounds?
Oh, sure. I mean, I couldn't wait to get to America. The first thing I wanted to do was find Mary Lou Williams and Cleo Brown and Hazel Scott and those people. I wanted to find out where they were working and meet them.
And it really was the land of musical dreams then?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, of course, Jimmy wanted to take me down to Eddie Condon's, and they let me sit in so I could show off my Dixieland repertoire.
I have to stop you there for a moment because there were many people, regular listeners, will know your story well. But just for a moment, tell us about Jimmy. Tell us about your husband, Jimmy McPartland, and how you met in musical terms, how the importance of this introduction. How did you meet?
Well, when Jimmy was in the Army and I was in Belgium on USO camp shows, and he just happened to arrive in that area. He was a mere GI, and he was with some group. I forget the name of it, but anyway, people found out that Jimmy was who he was. He was a horn player, and they're all saying, "Jimmy McPartland's coming, Jimmy McPartland's," and they wanted to throw a party, and they did. And I'm not aware of Jimmy, but I wanted to be, and of course I wanted to crash the party. And being a ham and very pushy, I wanted to play. And Jimmy told me much later that he saw me come in and said to himself, "Oh, a woman, and she wants to play, and I know she'll be lousy." And you were.
Oh, nice. So love at first sight.
Yeah. But he got over that. He found out I wasn't so bad after all.
Well, let's hear Jimmy and yourself playing Summertime when he was your guest on Piano Jazz in 1990. Before the clip, you mentioned Jimmy's remark, "Here comes a woman, she won't be any good." Did you feel that you had to prove yourself a little bit more as a pianist because of that? Or did people understand your musicality right away?
Oh, I think I did have to prove myself.
A little bit more because of being a woman?
Yeah, and I wanted to prove myself to the musicians, other musicians, rather than to the audience.
Yeah,
I sort of felt they must know something, else they wouldn't be sitting there at the bar. So,
well, jazz musicians are a tough crowd, aren't they?
They are a tough crowd.
Yeah, I mean, the fakers are going to get caught out right away. That's for certain. And fakers like me, they're going to see right through. You know. The second word of the title of the show, jazz. There's a phenomenal explosion of creativity among people both sides of the Atlantic. I mean, there's a whole generation of musicians, actors, comedians, radio comedians in England particularly, that actually made their first alliances in the USO or the English equivalent of the USO. I mean, it seems that that was a very, I suppose it threw a lot of people from who might have taken years to encounter one another. And in this case, a man from America and a girl from England. I mean,
yeah, very strange. Yeah.
You obviously had a very clear idea of America from records, and I'm sure everybody in the world by that point had an idea of America from movies.
Yeah, I did.
Did America conform to your expectations when you first came?
Yeah, it was pretty fabulous.
It was vibrant.
It was, put it absolutely, what was vibrant. It was, I think it was more vibrant in those days than it is now. I could spend a whole hour talking about New York in those days.
And there were lots of clubs.
There were lots of clubs, yeah.
And other places to play later on, after hours. There was music going on. That isn't a romantic fantasy then. It is genuine. I mean, it seems kind of sad now when one goes to 52nd Street and there's a sign up that says this was where the jazz scene was, but it wasn't just there. It was all over the city. But,
it was.
You know, there's no, unfortunately, that there wasn't the foresight for anybody to say people will want to come one day and see where these amazing musical innovations took place, because many of them didn't just happen in somebody's attic around a piano. They happened in the heat of the moment in a club.
And you, they did.
And you were right into it. How quickly did you get right into the thick of it?
Well, I was in Chicago first, so I played a lot of Chicago clubs with Jimmy. And then we came to New York after I think we were maybe 3 years in Chicago, because he's from Chicago and his family was there. But finally we decided to go to New York. And it wasn't long before I got the gig at the Embers. That was the first one.
And did you encounter a lot of musicians? I mean, you mentioned in your conversation with Teddy Wilson, this is somebody that you listened to on record when you were in England. When was the first time you can remember being in a situation where you were playing and you found there was somebody in the club who you really admired, or somebody that you couldn't believe you were actually seeing in person?
Oh, it happened all the time.
I imagine it did. Who were the sort of people that you were running across?
Well, Mary Lou, first of all.
So you did track her down?
I did track her down, yes. And Oh, and Teddy, too, when he was with Benny. Yeah. I heard them and, of course, Oscar Peterson. Different clubs kept springing up besides the ones that were there already.
And I mean, that
Jimmy Ryan's, I mean...
You're mentioning a list of people who... some of whom are featured as guests on Piano Jazz there. And I mean, this is, you know, it's remarkable to think that, I know Hank Jones would be in that scene, I'm sure.
He certainly was.
And Tommy Flanagan and Oscar, you know. What was the... that's a... now, that must have been an intimidating prospect, particularly...
Well, it was. I remember I said to him... I wish you'd just leave a few notes for me. But we had fun. I didn't let it get to me too much.
Well, let's listen to you and Oscar duet.
You know, I'll live dangerously again.
There we go.
What did we pick?
Cottontail.
Oh, Cottontail. Okay.
I'll let you start this.
Oh.
And I'll just
all right,
play
it'll be a nice conservative tempo.
Originally, the premise of Piano Jazz was obviously to feature pianists, but reviewing these shows, it's become evident that you've broadened your guest list to include artists who are not primarily known for their pianistic skills, which was a relief for me. I think it actually has added a different depth and dimension to the series, calling on other instrumentalists and singers to play a part in the program.
When we got to the point that we decided... we didn't have to have just piano players. We could have people play piano on another instrument, like Gary Burton. Yeah. Or Dizzy Gillespie. He played piano, and then he played his horn.
Let's have a listen, then.
How about you if you play one on the horn? Or do you want to play one on the piano?
No, the horn. What key are we going to play then? Don't give me no funny keys. Then.
I'll play in your keys, Mr. Gillespie, sir. I will play in your key. And it's going to be what, in a mellow tone?
In a mellow tone. In
okay.
A mellow tone. Boom, bang, bang, boom, boom, bang. Yeah, I like
the full Piano Jazz broadcast. Tune in next week to your NPR station. Log on to pianojazz.npr.org to find a station in your area. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from Save America's Treasures, a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Parks Service, Department of the Interior, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR.